Hello and welcome to another episode of Alec Mappa Hot Mess with Matthew Dempsey, psychotherapist. I'm Alec Mappa. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
We're both overeating right now.
Yes, we are.
Because it's the holiday where you're allowed to do that. And so we don't have a live show, but what we wanted to do was express gratitude because it's Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And share with you our very first show together.
That's right. It was a great one.
Were you nervous?
I was very nervous. I'm coming on this podcast, hanging out with you, hanging out with Kristen Johnson, thinking like, what the hell am I going to say?
Right.
And but it was a great conversation. It was so lovely. It was such a very easy conversation with the two of you.
Yes. And since then, the podcast has grown. We've gotten more and more listeners. It's taken us a bit, but you know, you've been so kind, listener.
Yes.
Wherever you are, in your car, at home, maybe hiding from your relatives right now, in sharing our podcast, in downloading and subscribing. And again, we want to express gratitude for you listening. And if you appreciate the show, share it with everybody you know. Very grateful
for you guys listening and also for sending some of the sweetest kind of most random messages to us to let us know that if anything we're saying is resonating with you, we love to hear that.
So we love to hear that. And of course, I never tire of getting messages about how hot Matt is. That's what I really love. You know, I try to put myself out there every week. But what I really want to hear from everybody is how hot Matt is. I'm kidding. I'm grateful to you. And we're so excited to bring you more shows in the future. So until then, enjoy your holiday and enjoy our very first episode with Kristen Johnston. Hey, welcome to the very first episode of Hot Mess, Alec Mappa with Matthew Dempsey, psychotherapist. I'm Alec Mappa. I'm an internationally beloved actor and comedian, and I live in Hollywood.
And I'm Matthew Dempsey. I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor, which is just a lengthier way of saying I'm a psychotherapist. I'm a qualified professional.
And I have no qualifications whatsoever. I am, however, qualified to discuss my own experiences with depression, anxiety, toxic relationships, physical abuse, codependency, alcoholism, drug dependency, and bad fashion. I wore parachute pants.
The list is endless. Alec, don't worry about it because you're always working through it. The pursuit of health takes diligence and hard work, especially right now. The entire world is a hot mess. But we're going to zero in on some of our biggest fears, anxieties, issues, and discuss coping solutions and strategies because let's face it, underneath it all,
everyone is a hot mess. See what we did there?
This is our first show. I'm so excited.
This is our first show. And you know, we are like, we're going to save the world, basically.
I'm ready.
Our very first show, are you ready to save the world? Because our very first episode is all about addiction.
It is about addiction.
So within the next 45 minutes, addiction will be ended.
I can't wait to cure this problem.
We should have started with global hunger, but addiction is good too.
Well, we'll get you.
Our very first guest, I'm so excited, is my old friend, Kristen Johnston.
Yeah.
And you all know her. She played Sally on Third Rock, which is kind of the very first transgender character on a sitcom.
Yeah.
Because her character was a male in a female's body, blah-de-de-blue, blue, blue. But she also wrote the most incredible book, which I got. She sent me The Galleys when it first came out, called Guts. Mm-hmm. And it is the most authentic memoir ever about addiction and how you get there and what causes it. Now, as a clinical psychologist, as a certified therapist, what's your definition of addiction?
How did I know we were going to start with that? Just diving right into clinical definitions. Listen, I don't give like kind of lengthy clinical definitions and stuff, but this is just kind of what I'll say about addiction.
All right.
Okay, so I think probably the most important thing about addiction is to just recognize the fact that on some level, it's something that we can just kind of like all relate to, right? So it's really just kind of like any time that we're numbing out from negative thinking, from uncomfortable feelings, it's just easy to get kind of lost in that stuff. Like for me, I can get sucked into my phone forever. I can spend hours swiping through all the social media. Or I kind of,
I once had 4 hours and 45 minutes on Instagram.
In one
sitting? I
looked
into my activity. Yes. And I was mortified. I was like, I've always felt like a 12-year-old white girl, but now I officially am. So
is that why we're actually doing this show? Is this just a kind of,
that's why we're doing this show, so that I don't have to look through your Instagram feed. So that is your addiction.
Well, yes. Okay. So, but
kind of vanilla. I'm not very impressed.
Okay. But the most important part, I think, is that it can become really problematic for us when it interferes with our ability to just kind of like live our lives, to meet our daily responsibilities, that kind of stuff. Right. But I think, honestly, whether you identify as an addict or not, it's very easy for us to just kind of get tunnel visioned on some of these labels. I think it's more helpful for all of us to just kind of focus on whatever that kind of like, whatever's underneath that, like the compulsive escapism, why we need to run away, that kind of stuff. That's what's important.
Yeah. Self-loathing. That was my big motivator. How much I hated myself. It's like in my 20s, you know, it wasn't enough for me to feel like a piece of shit.
Yeah.
I needed relationships that reflected that.
Uh-huh.
So, boy, that was like, it was a bumper car in my 20s. And my own self-loathing, my addiction was, I'm a recovering sex and love addict.
Uh-huh.
And as sexy as that sounds, there's nothing sexy about it.
Yeah.
It was really one of the most painful times of my life. I was really numbing out from my own miserable childhood, which if you keep listening to the podcast, you're going to learn all about it, folks. It's a cute story, I promise.
Buckle up.
We're good now. I've been married to the same guy for 18 years. Yeah. But, you know, stuff for me, self-esteem stuff still comes up.
Yeah, of course. And it does for everybody. And, you know, we can kind of express those insecurities, those issues in a variety of different ways. Our defenses show up very differently. I'm kind of curious, though. You said sex and love addict. I'm not sure that like everybody knows exactly what that is. But what was that for you?
Wow. Okay. Well, I was very sexually precocious. I had sex at a very early age, 14. And I had nobody walking me through it saying, this is sex, this is love, this is sex, this is love. Now, with men, with dudes, it's... full disclosure, I'm gay. I don't know if people were able to figure that out yet. It's like with men, you could be a hole in the wall. It really doesn't make any difference. It's
well, they're actually
personal.
Suggesting that that's what it should be right now during these COVID days, right? That's how we stay safe.
Well, you know, I am only being filmed from the waist up, so you don't know what I'm doing right now.
Beautiful views.
No, but to me, I was always seeking physically intimate relationships because I thought they were the equivalent of being loved. And what it took for me to quit, and we're talking like a history of like 15, 16 years of me, of this kind of like addictive pattern of always seeking that. It was entirely dangerous because it was during the height of the AIDS era. So it's a miracle I'm alive. But what took me out of it was I finally dated a guy who was so dynamite in the sack and amazing and the most horrible human being that has ever been born. Mm-hmm. Like he was just so awful. He was satanic. It was like he was really emotionally abusive. Mm. It was becoming physically abusive. We were doing a lot of drugs together. And then I was finally like, and I couldn't stop leaving. I couldn't leave him. Yeah. I was like Tina Turner with Ike. And it wasn't like it was going on like, oh, I have no idea that this is a terrible person.
Right.
I knew exactly everything that was wrong with it.
But that was your drug of choice, right? And it's when we don't actually have other tools to go for, we just go with what we know. And so when we're lacking more awareness and other ways of being able to feel more intimately fulfilled and that kind of stuff, you're just going to go for the sex. You're going to go for the one thing that's actually been giving you something as opposed to not knowing if you can get anything.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And
was that your rock bottom? Was that guy your rock bottom?
Oh, yeah. No, you know what? It was, I think what happened was I realized I couldn't leave. My mother had died in 1992, and I saw him again, and his behavior hadn't changed, and he didn't ask me how I was.
Oh.
He didn't, you know, that any stranger on the street, if you walk, oh, how you doing? My mom died. How are you? What's going on? He was like John Hamm in Bridesmaids going, I really got a busy day today, so I have to leave. And that's when I realized this guy's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And if I don't leave him now, I'm never going to leave him. And so I started going, before it was called Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, it was called CODA.
Uh-huh, Codependence
Anonymous. And that's what snapped me out of it. The value for me in going to meetings was I would hear other people with similar issues and go, you know what your problem is? And I'd go, oh, that's me. I did that last night.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Whether it's like sex, love, just these codependent relationships, however you want to call it, it's just so easy for us to throw ourselves into that when we really struggle to know what our own inherent worth is. We're grasping for anything outside of us to try to make us feel okay or to numb out from our own.
Right. Self. That's the thing. It's the numbing out. I think that when you are high, when you are in this kind of like euphoric sense, it takes you so far away from the stuff that you're terrified of looking at.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the hot mess I'm talking about. Yes. When you ask for wellness, when you invite wellness into your life, you have to go into the forest and slay all your demons. And you know, that's what it is, right?
Of course you do. Yeah, listen, you have to go real deep. You have to go deep. And that's hard. And it's not necessarily you need to dive into the deep end straight away, but just being able to kind of start cracking the door open. And again, whether you identify as an addict or not, we can all relate to that, right? Like the shame, the insecurities, the fear that we don't measure up, and just being brave enough to start questioning some of that stuff, cracking the door open and just being curious about it, and then let that take you and you can keep building.
You had me at shame.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Listen, we have an amazing guest.
Yes, we do.
She's so fucking talented.
Our guest today is an Emmy Award winning actress known for her role as Sally Salomon on the hit show Third Rock from the Sun, which I love. I used to watch with my dad and stepmom when I was a kid. Love it. She famously also fell out of a window in Sex and the City. Iconic. And currently stars as the recovering addict on the CBS sitcom Mom. But behind the camera, she struggled with her own addiction and has publicly spoken out to make a difference.
And most importantly, she's my former classmate, my close personal friend. We went to NYU together. And I'm absolutely bananas about her. Please welcome to the show, Kristen Johnston. Yay! Where's the applause button? You look great.
Thank you.
Oh my God, I haven't seen you in forever. I guest starred on Mom a couple seasons ago with the Rosie O'Donnell episode where you find out that Allison Janney had had an affair with her.
Yes.
And I ran the West Hollywood AA meeting. Were you not on the show?
I was not yet? On. No, I'm on it the last 2 years.
When did Chuck add you? Whose idea was that? His or yours?
It was his. They called me up and they asked me to just come on for one episode. So I did. And it was so fun. And then they said after the episode, they were like, we'll have you come back. We're going to have you come back. Mm-hmm. And I was like, right, that'll never happen.
We'll have you come back to replace all the scenery that you chewed.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So they actually did have me come back, which was shocking. And so it was fantastic.
Isn't that magical when that happens?
It is.
Because
I'm always of that belief too.
I'm always of that belief too. Like, oh, you were so great. We're going to have you back. I'm like, kiss my ass. Goodbye. Never going to see you again. I was
exactly.
I did a guest star on Ugly Betty for once. I was replacing, who wasn't available. Who was the guy from Project Runway? Tim Gunn. He couldn't do the episode.
That's so funny. I replaced Paula Abdul on Ugly Betty. That's hilarious.
So we were all the pinch hitters.
Yeah.
So I replaced, and they said, we're going to have you back. And then I was on for 4 seasons. So that was really, really great.
Yeah, exactly. What happens. You know, I was listening to you guys at the top of the show, at the introductions, and, you know, I was dying to chime in because everything you talk about, I connect to so profoundly, especially, you know, for me, I just wanted to say that the definition of addiction, which is nothing you can find in a book. It's something you do that makes you feel other that makes you feel other than yourself, but that you do to an extent where you no longer can then find who you really are. I mean, I know that sounds
I've never heard it put that way. And that's the,
so that's what it is for me. I mean, it's like any, it could be anything. And I frankly think every single human being alive, or certainly in America, is addicted to something.
Yeah. That's, something. That's your first line in your book, Guts, the Endless Follies and Tiny Triumphs of a Giant Disaster, which I got the galleys. I didn't get an authentic copy, but that's okay.
Oh, John. I'm well, happy just to
looking
I'll
at it. I'm have no, I'm fine with an e-reader. I'm, I have cataracts, but I know you're very busy as a sitcom star. So
Alec is addicted to guilting. So there's,
guilting.
There's
that too. So you're perfect. Perfect, because today's subject is addiction. Matthew, go. That's your cue.
That's my cue. Yeah. Well, Kristen, I mean, obviously, we've been talking about the fact that your own mom, you play this Tammy Diffendorf character who is dealing with her own kind of, you know, drug and alcohol addiction. So I'm kind of curious, how much does your own experience with addiction, you know, inform that role?
Yeah, it well, it plays a huge part because, you know, as an actor, and Al can speak to this, you try to connect to whatever character you're playing to as much as possible. So however you can connect to that person, you're like, oh, I relate to her. She's single or she's this or she has a kid, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So you really try to like hone in on that. And for me, I really connect to the fact that Tammy is such a hot mess, as you guys see, as your show is called. But she really is. I mean, she is the worst. And she is just out of prison, which I can't relate to, but
I can
relate to. Yeah, I can relate to, I certainly should have been in prison for some of the stuff I've done, but I've never gotten caught at it. Thank God. So, but I love that about it. And actually the weirdest part is of all the actresses in the main cast, I'm the only one who's actually, who's actually an addict. So it's funny, like they turn to me, they're like, does this happen at AA meetings and stuff like that? So that's been cool. And, so it's the perfect job at the perfect moment in my life. So it's really been great.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
That never happens. Yeah.
Were you able to finish the season or did Rona shut you down?
Rona shut us 2 episodes before we were supposed to end. So we almost got it all done and we're going back to work in like a month, supposedly. I mean, who knows?
How much I'm kind of curious actually, because, you know, obviously coronavirus, there's also all of the kind of racial unrest. There's just like a lot of intense stuff that's going on right now.
Yeah. I hadn't heard.
We're reporting news. Okay. Anyway, but so, you know, I'm just kind of curious, like, does that actually affect your sobriety and addictions in any way? Like how?
You know, what's weird is, you know, I spent so much of my 20s and 30s out. And so since I moved to LA and I got diagnosed with lupus a few years ago, so things have just really slowed down for me. And plus I'm older now. So for me, it's honestly not much different. I mean, like I have my friends, my core group of people that I love and hang out with and a bunch of dogs and a job. And that's pretty much been my life for the last few years anyway.
That sounds perfect. That
I know,
sounds,
right?
That's like my dream life. All that's missing. I have the same scenario. All that I'm missing is a job. A job would be nice.
Yeah, exactly. But see, the thing that, well, you do have a job. You have this.
I have this. So, I'm a podcast superstar from this day forward.
Well, you will be. Yeah. But I do want to say that I think, you know, speaking on social media, I have a lot of followers who are addicts who connected to me through the book and stuff. And a lot of people are struggling right now. So it isn't something I take lightly. I mean, I think, you know, the isolating people who can't go to physical meetings, it's really, really challenging, especially for people new in recovery. So one of the great things that I think has saved lives is Zoom meetings.
Are they having Zoom meetings for a friend?
There are Zoom AA meetings and they are, I personally have only attended one, but I have friends in long-term recovery who do it every day. I mean, they love it. So if somebody's listening to this and they're thinking about getting sober or, you know, and they're like, well, maybe I'll wait till after, you know, the quarantine is lifted, you know, what a great way to try out recovery by going to a Zoom meeting. You know, you don't even have to leave your house.
Yeah. Right. It makes you a little braver by not actually having to.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cause when
you don't have to turn the camera on, you can just watch the meeting and just see what it's about.
Yeah. When I first started going to meetings, I would show up at places where I feel like this is like the second location for a serial killer. There could yes. there could not possibly be a meeting happening in this dirty, dank, dirt floor basement. And then I would be the only person there. And then sure enough, like minutes before, everybody would file in. But I would be like, what am I doing? This is
crazy. I know. But then, you know, the thing is, it's also, you know, for me, I always thought like getting sober would be like 10 old men in a basement somewhere mm-hmm. with like one light bulb. And
sometimes,
but it's so not that. I mean, it really isn't. It's such a, it's certainly in LA. I mean, sure, it's different everywhere, but I've gone to meetings all over the United States pretty much at this point. And every time I've gone to one, and I'm not a huge AA person. I mean, it saved my life. And then I sort of, you know, stepped away from it for a little while.
Huh.
But it is every meeting you go to, I've gone to, I see someone or I've heard something that has really impacted me. So. Mm-hmm.
And it's how I got away from that guy.
Oh,
and
good.
And this was like the most toxic I've ever been. The meetings forced me to examine why I was doing mm-hmm. it. You know, because my dad hated me and I needed a man to approve of me. And it was really about like what you said. It's like it's something that makes you feel other than you are, because mm-hmm. how I felt on my own, I literally felt like if I did not have this relationship, no matter how shitty it was, I would be nobody.
Yeah.
I felt empty.
I was a monster. I really thought I was a monster, like an actual monster. It, you know, so I was just doing everything to not feel like a monster.
Well, let's talk. Okay, Matthew, go ahead.
Well, no, but I mean, you're talking about feeling like a monster and all of that stuff obviously coming up, and then, you know, going in the rooms and having to confront all of that, you know, kind of program. What was it, if you feel comfortable to share, what was it you actually took an actual look at that beast? What did you start to realize was?
Oh, well, it's great that you brought, I mean, there's the last chapter of the book I wrote, is about that. About
everybody buy the book right now. Go to Amazon right now. You can like pause this. I swear it's one of, it's a, I read it in a day.
Thank you.
I read it in a day because I have a short attention span. I have ADHD, which I'm actually on an Adderall right now. And I read it in one day. It's so
thank
good.
You. That's so nice, Alec. Thank you. That means a lot to me. It really does. So just to answer your question, you know, at a certain point early in recovery at AA, if you're really trying to do it, you sort of stand in front of the meeting and you kind of just share, you tell your story. And I was just so horrified. And I was like, I'm an actress and everyone will know me and blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, well, going to the meeting, I was like, I'll only tell part of it. Like, I'm not going to tell this part. I'm not going to tell that part. And I won't say that I, you know, how embarrassed this was or how shameful this is. So I get to the meeting and I end up talking and I tell everything. I mean, everything, like every bad, terrible, disgusting, shameful thing that I was so, I'd never told.
What made you choose in that moment? What made you choose to just spill it all?
I don't know.
More importantly,
to this day.
Yeah.
But the end of it is that afterwards, and everyone was like, whatever, you know, like they clapped.
Yeah, like, because it was so much worse in your head.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? The fact
somebody just murdered a hooker last week. You know what I mean? Like, they don't care.
Yeah.
Like,
and the body's still in the trunk. I don't know what your story is about. I don't know why that's such a big deal.
Yeah, Brene Brown, like one of my favorite
therapists.
Yes, vulnerability. Yeah. I mean, the way that she talks about shame, kind of whatever that monster is for us, for each of us, that shame is basically like a fungus. Like, it can only survive and thrive and grow in the dark. So when you actually start to shed light on it, that's how we start to kill it off.
We're totally only as shameful as our secrets.
That's right.
It's true, though. Now I, like, you're like, oh, I hope it's okay to ask this. I'm like, dude, ask me anything. I swear to God, I have no problem.
On that note of asking anything, I want to talk about your book because I want people to hear about this. And because there are parallels. When I read the book, I was like, oh, fuck. Like, it was like, I knew you at NYU and we were like the people that nobody knew what to do with. Remember, it was me, you, Molly Shannon, and Adam Sandler, and Jessica Lundy.
Jessica Lundy and Jessica Hecht.
And so we would write our own shit and do our own shows. I think the last thing I saw you in at NYU was Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean.
Oh my God.
And you were playing
Catholic. So bad in that. Okay,
with Molly. It was you and Molly. Yeah. So in your book, you started talking about having this, because this is what the bell rang for me. You had addiction to alcohol and pills that began when you were in high school, you say, due to low self-esteem. I want, first of all, I want to know that happened to me too, because I was out as a gay person. And at my high school reunion 30 years later, they said, "We thought you were so cool and you were so punk and you didn't give a shit." And I said, "Oh, I was stoned the entire time. I was either on lewds or a Jack and Coke." So
I can't imagine being a gay kid in America, like how hard that must be to come to terms with that. And
but you can relate to being a misfit. I mean, you can relate to being, but man, Allison Janney is probably the only actress you've ever acted opposite who's as tall as you.
She is. It's true. It's amazing. You know, the director calls us the Twin Towers of comedy.
There you go. So I want to know in high school, Kristen, what kind of alcohol and what kind of pills?
Alcohol, anything. No, not really pills yet. Pills was more in my like mid to late 20s when I got a migraine and I was taken to Cedars-Sinai by my boyfriend and they gave me a shot of morphine and I was like, this is the answer. Oh my God, I've solved all of life's problems. I'm going to be on this now for the rest of my life. Anyway, but no, in high school, it was, I mean, I was a huge alcoholic. I just didn't know it. I was just the party girl.
But I think in high school, you're just kind of breaking the rules. And then that spills over into college. I was
so painfully, I see pictures of myself and I'm like, I was cute. But what I felt like the grossest, giant, I felt like a huge monster.
Yeah.
You know, I just did, I was not in my own skin.
I felt ugly. I felt ugly and undesirable.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking all the time, I'm so ugly. And I look at pictures and I look like a hooker. I'm so cute. and, but I was always kind of like, I think my kind of like toxicity swept over into college and a lot of the behavior either kind of, I think, got a little more magnified.
Yeah. It's just all the funhouse mirrors, you know, that like when we were kind of just, you know, wrestling with our own demons or our monsters as it was, you know, that we project that out. And then you know, we kind of like see the monstrosity
outside.
But that's
the thing is, like, if anybody's young and like listening to this or watching this, you know, I want to like go back in time and talk to the younger Alec and younger Kristen. And you've probably always been perfect, but like,
always,
you know, but you know, and say to them, like, you know, look, the fact that you're struggling so hard right now pays off later because it's making you cool. It's making you smart. It's making you rely on something other than your physicality. Like, you know, it really made me read. I was, you know, I just became a better person because of all the horrible shit I went through.
Right. So, right. And like,
I mean, all those people who were popular in high school are just disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, it forced like anything that, you know, kind of creates that shame for you. It forces you to have to dig deep and confront who you actually are. And to be honest with you, you know, I think probably in pretty much most every way, I kind of, you know, kind of operate from a lot of privilege in my life. But the one thing that was not that way for me was being gay. And I am actually so effing happy that that was the case for me, because it's the one gateway to actual authenticity. It's the one thing that really had to force me to look at myself and to figure out.
Probably why you do what you do.
100%. Right. Yeah.
Because in that case, you really do have two choices. I can be miserable or I can be happy.
Yeah.
And when you have the courage to be vulnerable, when you have the courage to kind of like you said, go to those meetings and say the most shameful thing and have everybody go, whatever. Next.
But it takes a lot of courage, and it's not just about making a choice, but it's also about having access to information. So even like a podcast like this, hopefully if there's any opportunity to be able to learn some tools and find some steps that you can take and normalize your experiences, those kinds of things, that's what can get you there.
Did you drink every day? Did you drink every day in high school?
Me?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, not every day, but I mean,
I drank a lot.
I drank to blackout.
Yeah, I would get blackout drunk after school, but during the school, sometimes I love downers, and they used to have this thing called Quaaludes. And
yes.
Those are.
I've never been a downer person. I'm an upper person.
I became an upper person when I moved to New York because it was in the 80s and everybody had it.
But wait, one thing I wanted to say about masks, you know, speaking of face masks, but like, you know, I thought for so long, I was under the impression that I should be whoever you want me to be.
Yeah.
So I wore this mask of like funny girl, this girl, that girl. I was whatever you wanted me to be. And it took until like late 20s, maybe even early 30s to realize no one really wants to be around someone who wears a mask.
Yeah.
They want to be around someone who's exactly who they really are.
Yep.
It's the equivalent of like when you're doing stand-up, and I don't like hanging around stand-up comics who are always on.
Oh God. Yeah.
That to me is cringy. It's kind of like,
totally.
We're not at work. You're not in front of a microphone. No. Relax.
Do you guys ever have to pay attention to yourself in social situations where you might kind of start to put it on and you have to consciously
dial it back? Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
definitely. I mean, but you know, the thing that's so funny is the more you're authentic, the more that feels comfortable, and the inauthentic person you are, all of a sudden becomes, you literally can't do it anymore. You're like, I don't know who that is. And then when you see it in others, in authenticity, you're just like, okay, take, for example, Donald Trump. Like, he's so we don't have to go down a political road, but
I'm fine.
To me, he's so inauthentic that I just go, he's so full of himself and full of shit that I just can't even watch him.
Yeah. I don't think he knows who he is.
No, exactly.
I don't think he
never took the mask off.
The epitome of privilege and just so wildly ego-driven, narcissistic, just so lost in his own delusions.
Yeah. I don't want to lose the thread here. Matthew had a question about
pills.
The pills. No.
Well, you did. Kristen, you were mentioning about the pills kind of that time in your life, later in 20s. Yeah. And so I never even heard of this, but I did, you know, in preparing for this, about you had something, it was a life-threatening thing called peritonitis. So that was, it's like your intestines ripped open and you almost died. You were in the hospital. Tell us about that.
Well, I was in London.
You almost died. Go.
It's a good setup.
I was doing a play in London on the West End. It's actually what the whole book is about. That's why it's called Guts, because my guts exploded. So I'm in London, and I had taken 7 years worth of pills by this point. And I mean, your tolerance goes up so fast with those things that by the end I was taking just handfuls.
Hours. In the book you said 40 a day of codeine.
No, way more than that.
Oh, wow.
It went up to, there was one time I was doing like 80 a day. It was so gross.
So is it like an Altoid? There's always one in your mouth?
No, there's just, I would just take
swallow handfuls at a time.
Yeah.
All right. Exactly. My curiosity is, how does that manifest in you physically? What does a person on 40 pills look like and sound like?
Not great. I mean, I was so high. And it was a long time ago, but what I do remember is I was extremely thin. I was dark circles. I mean, I don't think you poo like at all. I mean, from what I remember, not to get too TMI, but
I'm fine with poo.
Yeah.
It really messes up your whole body. My skin was horrible, like terrible acne. And I was, you know, it was just a bad, dark time. It was right after Third Rock is when I got really bad. In London at the time, you could get over the counter, you could get codeine pills. So, you know, taking 40 of them equals one Vicodin, whatever. Anyway, you know, you become a chemist when you're an addict. Anyway, so I was taking a bunch of that, and about 2 months into my journey in on the West End, right after opening night, my stomach just gave. I had an ulcer that I didn't know I had, and it just ripped open. I was alone in my flat, and it was the most agony. I'm like, oof. I mean, you can go through and not and live. I mean, I think
Was it just an immediate sharp pain?
Oh my God! It was just like someone knifed me in the stomach.
Were you alone?
I was alone.
You were alone.
Yeah, and I had to crawl in child's pose because that's the only way I could tolerate it, to the guest room of this place I was staying at to try to find my cell phone. And finally I go through it minute by minute in the book. It's pretty gory and disgusting. So for people who like that stuff,
that's my favorite part.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, so, but it was crazy because it was a really horrible thing to go through. I was in the hospital for 2 months. I in a foreign country, it was crazy.
And the doctor said to you at some point, you might die.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the doctor said, didn't the doctor say to you, because you were about to get up and leave, and the doctor said, I want to be really clear. If you leave right now, you are going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And then it got infected. So I had to go back. I mean, it was horrifying. It was just disgusting and really agony. But then when I was finally fully healed and I went back into the show, they kept the show alive. I know.
Wow.
I went back into the show.
What was the show? It was Hello Dolly. and you're playing Dolly Levi. Nice to have you back where you belong. And then you fall down the stairs.
Oh my God. No, it was with Michael McKean and Cillian Murphy. It was a great show called Love Song. Yeah, it was really good. I played Cillian Murphy's sister. Anyway, so I went back in like, you know, a full skeleton compared to what I had been. And like they're taking in my pants as of before I go on stage. But what was so amazing about it is I go on, I do the play, and I get off stage, and some friends were at the stage door, and they were like, come with us. And even though I knew I'd never drink again, I had a martini that night. And that's the moment I went, oh my God, I'm never going to stop. Like even 2 months in the hospital, like I was like, oh, I'll stop now. But that was the moment I went, unless I get professional help, I am never going to stop. So that's when I booked a bed in rehab. Was really hard.
Yeah. Was it a nice one or was it the?
It was a nice one. It was the Meadows in Arizona.
The thing about addiction, it's like when I describe it to people, it's not like I know I'm making I'm completely unaware I'm making a bad choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just don't have the impulse control not to. It's kind of like,
yeah,
sure.
How long were you there for?
I was there a month.
Okay.
I think I should have been there longer. I think if I had it to do again, I would go back and stay longer. But I did do a sober living afterwards, which was really helpful. And so that was, that's that.
For folks who don't know what sober living is, because I had a friend who just went through that recently. Yeah. What is that? How would you describe that to people who don't know what sober living is?
It varies because it's not state run or it's not, there's no real oversight to it. So you can get a great one run by amazing people. And then you can get one run by like a full-on using drug addict, which has happened to a couple friends of mine. So really research the place. But for me, sober living was amazing because it's, you know, when you're in rehab, you're away from the world. Mm-hmm. You don't have to deal with anything, which is important. I mean, you know, you're just looking at yourself. But sober living is more in between. It's like a halfway house, frankly. Mm-hmm. But it's like you live there, so you're in a safe place, but then you can go out, you go to work, or you go
to meet. An actual house with your own room, or do you have a roommate? Or
well, it varies. I mean, for me, I had a roommate, but it varies. It really does. There are thousands of them all.
And is it required as part of your recovery that
No. What I would do is, you know, if you were interested in information, whatever town you're in, I would just Google sober livings in Alameda or wherever the hell you are.
Yeah, okay.
And then, you know, you can find more information. Again, they really do vary. And there can be fantastic experiences like I had or horrifying experiences. Yeah. Really check it out. Yeah.
There are over 90,000 people missing at any time, and over 500,000 are reported missing every year. And that's just in the United States. I'm Mike Morford.
And I'm Jess Betancourt. And in our podcast, Missing Persons, we discuss cases of people who have gone missing under mysterious circumstances. And we're joined in each episode by guests who are either related to the missing person, investigating their disappearance, or advocating for answers in the case.
Missing Persons is available everywhere you listen to podcasts, and there are dozens of episodes to binge on right now. Subscribe today so you don't miss an episode.
Hi, this is Rachel Yucatel, and I'm here to invite you to listen to my podcast, Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. This podcast delves into the lives of those who have been reduced to a single headline. Each episode will take a closer look at the stories of those who are on a mission to change their narrative. Join me as we uncover the truth behind the misconceptions, shed light on the stories of those who have perhaps been wrongfully portrayed, explore the complexities of the human experience, and celebrate the power of second chances. Who doesn't love a good comeback story?
So wait, Matthew, you had one more question. I want Matthew to ask his question.
Okay, go, Matthew.
I don't even know what question you're talking about. I was lost.
You lost in the conversation. This is our first podcast. I just don't want to step in any.
You guys have been doing this for years. This is
my people pleasing bullshit. Okay. Afterwards, was I okay? Did I talk too much? I want to read to you a quote from your book because it really spoke to me. This felt like I actually cried when I read this because this was my experience. Because at my highest, at my most messed up professionally, I was really kicking ass.
Yeah.
Yes. You know what I mean? Yes, I just finished a Broadway show. I'd done a pilot. I was in great demand. I was recurring on two different shows. I was doing really, really well. So this is what I want to read. When I tried to check out, the doctor warned, "Let me be very clear with you. If you leave the hospital, you without question die." As I watched the New Year's Eve fireworks over the London Eye from my hospital room window, grief overwhelmed me. True, real sorrow for finally understanding what I was, a selfish, self-serving, loathsome creature who did nothing to better the world. Finally, truly felt the weight of all the pain I had caused, all the tears that had been wasted on me, all the gifts that had been given to me that I carelessly frittered away, and all of the thousands of hours I had spent obsessing about something as ridiculously boring and stupid as me. 39 years old, totally alone, a wasted life. Mm. Well, that's all the time we have for today. But that feeling of the realization, you've been giving back, lady.
Yeah.
Bravo. You founded a charity called Slam NYC, Sobriety, Learning, and Motivation, where you mentor high school girls. Tell us about that.
Well, it's actually now we've folded into another school in Staten Island. So we really, sober high schools make a huge difference for kids.
And there's more of them now.
There's a lot of them now. Yeah. We were starting out with whatever this was 10 years ago. No one would do it. Like, you know, all the insurance and what if a kid overdoses, whatever. So all that took a long time to fight. And I'm really proud of the fact that I was early in that fight. But now I've stepped away from it a little bit because it's now become its own thing. And it's sober high schools for, you know, obviously teens. Like there's some ridiculous statistic of like one out of every five teenagers meets the medical criteria for addiction. And you know, to get sober in high school, holy crap.
Holy shit.
So anyway, they're a huge thing and I'm really proud of the work I did for that. And I also, you know, I love talking to addicts and it keeps me sober. I love doing this show about addiction. So for me, addiction it started off being the worst thing that ever happened to me. And it's turned into like the greatest gift that has ever been given to me is my recovery.
Did you recognize any little Kristen Johnstons in the program?
Oh,
were you able
God,
to go
yes,
like, girl?
Oh, honey.
Yeah.
Honey, sure sweetie, you're not going to, don't shit a shitter.
But that's so nice when you see somebody that you can projectively identify with and then you can offer that kind of support that you know can be helpful. And it also heals that like kind of inner wounded child within you.
Yes, it does. And it really does. The whole, you know, core of like real recovery is helping others. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like whether you're helping make the coffee before meetings or just a sponsor or whatever. And that's how you get sober. So
definitely.
That's for sure.
All right. Well, listen, I mean, we're talking about addiction. We're talking about addiction.
We've solved addiction, everybody.
We have the answers. We have the answers.
It's over. I
just say one
next
thing.
Next week we'll solve racism. I know it.
Let me just say one thing. I hope you guys have me on this day every year from now on.
It's
like,
a deal.
I want to come on for your anniversary show.
It's a deal. Anniversary show. All right, go.
It's a deal. Yeah. If the world still exists a year from now, if Trump doesn't kill all of us, you're an infamous Trump tweeter.
I know.
Yes. You did actually just tweet recently, quote, "It feels like this country has blown apart and Trump lit the match." So what do you think is going on? And what do you think it's going to take for the country to be put back together?
Well, I mean, obviously voting him the fuck out, but you know, the ecosystem to animal hunting, to trophy hunting, to addiction research, to the Supreme Court, to abortion. I mean, his negative impact has been so huge that to get back to where we were at the end of Obama.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's going to take a long time. But
I also think of it as he's been a big purge for us as a country.
Uh-huh.
You know, we now are talking about race nonstop. Yes. Like it's a real
you're
thing.
Right.
And
totally.
We're talking about the legacy of slavery and the systemic racism, which has created this system.
Yeah.
And I don't think that if we had, first of all, I don't think they would have let Hillary govern at all. She would have been in court the entire time.
You're absolutely right.
But what Trump has done is he's exposed And every day
makes
it about, you know, it. I even forgot the last thing that he tweeted about. You know, he's completely forgotten that COVID exists. We're not talking about it anymore.
Real tragedy is the people who won't make it, who are dead, who didn't need to be. Even his followers were like, I'm not wearing a mask because I'm a Trump supporter. Yeah. I'm like, what?
And then I think this is kind of like the monster that we all need to purge, right? Kind this of like what we're out. Talking about just for individual, our own individual recovery.
Our country is you monster. In the hospital bed looking at the fireworks on New Year's Eve.
Yes.
That's what our country is now.
I didn't understand that systemic racism was, I understood it still existed, but not to this level. I didn't understand how tragic the education system is in this country and how truly uneducated, unfortunately, a huge portion of this country is.
And how they've been locked out of economic opportunity for the last 400 years. You know,
but all of us are a part of the system, right? And so there's people who are like grossly uneducated and want to be, you know, kind of willfully ignorant. But all of us too, we're a part of that system. And so for us to be able to model what that looks like, about how to turn inward and confront that.
Right. And how do you talk about dismantling a system you've benefited from?
Right.
You
know, it's hard.
That's the tricky thing too. All right. We have two more minutes. Kristen, I adore you. You've been so nice to me over the years. You saved my ass one year at a party in 1999.
What?
Madonna's brother was being a total dick to me. Chris Ciccone.
Oh my God.
I fucking hate him. So he wrote a tell-all about Madonna because
I remember that.
He had a big Coke problem and he ran out of money and he wanted to make some money and he totally like ratted her out on everything.
Yeah, nice guy.
So
nice guy.
Chris was the type of person who I would meet at a party a billion times. So in 1999, our friend Dan Jinks, who went to NYU with us, produced American Beauty. The party was at Chris Ciccone's place. And he'd always, Madonna bought him a club at one time that he ran to the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had just done Dharma and Greg. I had been on Broadway with Lithgow. I went to NYU with you. Mm-hmm. And who else show up? So, and I had just done, I mentioned Dharma and Greg. So it's Thomas Gibson, you and Dan all converge on me at the same time. How are you? What's going on? And I think you even got a drink from me from the bar. And we were talking. And
a couple
laughing.
For myself.
Yes. And then Chris Ciccone looked over at me like, it knows people. And then started going, Alec, how are you? And I was like, fuck you.
Yeah. Oh, my
fucking
God.
Bitch.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Get the fuck away from me. Wow. Because it was kind of like it was like all of a sudden three incredibly people of the moment were talking to me as a peer that's what changed it. So Kristen, on every episode, we have the hot message of the day. So do you have a message for everyone out there listening?
Well, don't give up because guess what? In 5 minutes, it'll feel different. And get my book. And I'm not saying that to sell a book because I'm never going to see another dime from it. I promise you. But if you are struggling, honestly, it might make you feel a little less alone. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I would say is just reach out whenever you can, because there are people, you'll find someone who will listen and who will hear you. And then you'll be that for someone else.
Yeah.
That's great.
Pay it forward.
Yeah. And then just play this over and over.
Yeah. Yes. You need to start wearing a tiara because you're Miss America to me now.
That's right, darling. So, thanks, you guys. This was so fun.
So much fun. Kristen, thank you so much. We end each show with our own hot mess message. And this week, it goes a little something like this. The first step in recovering from being a hot mess
is admitting you're a hot mess. Life's messy, so let's normalize it.
Kristen, where can we find you on your socials?
I don't really do anything except Twitter. So you can find me on Twitter. I'm the Kristen Johnson. No, the Kristen J.
Are you? You were originally KJ the Smartass. When did that change?
I know. I changed it because I grow up. I was like, I don't need to be a smartass anymore.
Oh my God, Matthew, what a great show. I feel so much better now.
Wait to get my bill.
Say what now? Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, download, and listen to Alec Mappa, Hot Mess with Matthew Dempsey, psychotherapist. On my socials, you can find me at Alec Mappa at Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And you can find me at MJ Dempsey Psych on all the same.
And we'll see you next week. Bye.
This has been a Stage 29 podcast production. The podcast is executive produced by Patty Ciano, Laferne Cusack, and Stephanie Kaysen. Our audio editors are Jackson Ruff and Jonathan DeMatti. Callie Kelts is the social media producer, and a special thanks to the rest of our podcast crew, Rwani Horenigay, William Cusack, Lisa Clark, Katie Brown, and Morgan Kaler.
This podcast has been produced by Stage 29 Productions for entertainment purposes only. The contents of this podcast does not constitute medical or professional advice, do not reflect the opinions of this company, any of its parent companies, affiliates, subsidiaries, promotional sponsors, or advertising agencies. The views expressed by the hosts and guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. For more information, please go to stage29.tv.